Chapter 49. Mother, Kata said, coming into the study. How are the wedding preparations coming? Daun Wariamo raised her eyes from the papers spread all over her desk. She loved lists. Our responsibilities are well in hand. Everyone has been informed of their precedence and the expected protocols. I only worry about Oshobi's mother. I'd say she has the brain of a hummingbird, except hummingbirds can hover for a moment or two. I expect the Takeda's half of the ceremony to be an unmitigated disaster. She pulled off her pince-nez. I heard some lunatic arrived claiming to be a Tofusen. A Tofusen, she said, as if there were more than one. He's nothing. Some white-haired freak, Kata said, waving it away. Mother, I want your opinion. An insult's been done to our family honor that may be on some people's minds as we go into this wedding, so I think I have to deal with it now. One of the cousins cuckolded her husband. She swears it was long ago and brief, but its effects continue. What should I do? Daun Wariamo scrunched her eyebrows, as if the answer were so obvious that Kata was stupid for asking. A slut cannot be tolerated, Kata. A whore dishonors us all. Very well. I'll see it taken care of. Who is it? Mother, Kata said quietly. I'm going to ask you a question. And if you lie to me, the consequences will be harsher than you can believe. Kata, is this how you speak to your mother? None of that, mother. What? Your tone is so disrespectful, I... Silence! Kata shouted. Daun Wariamo was too stunned for the moment to begin the usual tactics. Did you or did you not intercept letters that Solon sent to me? Kata asked. Daun Wariamo blinked rapidly, then said, Of course I did. For how long? Kata asked. I don't remember. How long? Kata asked, her voice dangerous. The Empress's mother said nothing for a long moment. Then she said, Years. Letters came every month, sometimes more often. Every week. I suppose. What did you do with them, mother? That Solon was worse than his brother. Don't you ever speak to me of that monster. Where are the letters? They were a tissue of lies. I burned them. When did he stop sending them? Kata asked. Her mother's expression went blank for a moment. Then she said, I don't know, 10 years ago. He didn't stop, did he? Don't you dare lie to me, by the gods, don't you dare! It's only a few times a year now. For all I know, it was some imposter, hoping to break your heart again, Kay. Don't let this stranger ruin everything. Even if it is Solon, you don't know him. If you postpone this wedding, it could mean the end of you. Harvest is the only time for a queen to marry, and if you delay, the seas will be impassable. The lords from the other isles won't be able to attend. You need this. We can't offend the Takedas again. Clan Takeda had been a thorn in Kata's side since she'd taken the throne. They had angled and manipulated for years for this wedding, and if, as a younger woman, she had sworn she would never marry Oshobi, now she knew there was no other way. Mother, is there anything else you haven't told me? Anything you want to confess? Of course not. Kata held up a finger. I want you to think very carefully. You're not as good a liar as you believe. Her mother hesitated, but the look on her face was that of a woman aggrieved that she could be suspect. There's nothing. Kata had been wrong. Her mother was an excellent liar. Cada turned to a guard. Summon my secretary and the chamberlain. Kay, what are you doing? Daun asked. The officials stepped into the room in moments. Cada had had them waiting outside. Mother, the woman you called a slut and a whore is you. You betrayed my father and dishonored us. No, I never... Did you expect to get away with it? You fornicated with an emperor, a man surrounded by bodyguards and slaves at all hours, and you, the lady of a high house, with bodyguards and slaves of your own. Did you think no one would notice? There was real fear in Daun Wariamo's face for the first time Cada had ever seen. It didn't mean anything, Kay. Until you got pregnant and didn't know who the father was. Daun Wariamo stood transfixed, as if she couldn't believe all of her secrets had yielded their rotten fruit on the same day. Around the room, officials and guards stood with mouths agape, barely daring to breathe. I wondered for years, Mother, why a woman so ambitious wouldn't want me to have anything to do with Prince Solon. It's because you were afraid he was my brother. You were afraid that your whoring would lead me, innocently, to an incestuous bed. Apparently your sense of honor is only diseased rather than non-existent. Tears were rolling down Daun's cheeks.
Cada, I was young. He said he loved me.
Did you believe the green mages when they examined me? I had no idea why at the time. I was only 9 years old, too young to be showing talent yet. They found out that I was a Wariamo, didn't they? Weren't you relieved? For a while. When Solon came home, a full-blue mage at 19, he asked to see me secretly. That's when I knew. He tried to be so subtle, swearing how he would never hurt you. But under it all there were threats, Cada. What would happen when he got tired of you? What if I ever vexed him? He could destroy me with a word. I would be his slave for the rest of my life. What if you opposed him? He could lie. Say the mages proved you were illegitimate. He was a mage himself. Everyone would believe it. We'd lose everything. Our only hope was to keep him away from us. It wasn't like I was hurting him. I even got him an offer for more schooling at Shosendi, which was a high honor. Cada's face relaxed, despite her fury. The decision had been made. The truth was out. Now there was room for sorrow. So you ruined my chances of happiness, because you couldn't believe that the man I loved would keep his word. I was protecting us. No one's as good as they pretend to be, Daun said. True in your case, Cada said. She turned. Secretary Tayabusa, please record that the Queen Mother is henceforth stripped of all privileges and titles. She is banished from all the isles and territories of Seth, and if found on them after tomorrow, the penalty will be death. At dawn, Chamberlain Inouye, you will have her accompanied to the harbour. You will pay her passage to whatever port she chooses. You will give her 10,000 yas to make sure that she leaves. She may be accompanied by one servant, if one can be found who volunteers to accompany her. Everyone was stunned. Mother, Cada said, if this were the first time you'd lied to me, I wouldn't do this. It is, however, the last time. Guards, I wish two of you to stay with her at all times. I doubt she will attempt to harm herself, but she has shown herself to be an adulteress and a liar. I don't expect theft is below her.
You can't do this,
Daun said, breathing so rapidly Cada expected her to pass out. I already have.
I'm your mother.
Cada stepped forward and put her hands on each side of her mother's face. She kissed her forehead. She took hold of the 6 platinum chains strung between her mother's cheeks and ear, and tore them out. Daoun screamed, her ear torn to ribbons, her cheek dripping blood. Kada said, "No. You are Queen Mother no more. You are Daoun Wariamo no more. Henceforth, you are Daoun Outcast. Guards?" The captain of the guard and his second stepped forward and took the outcast by each arm to lead her from the room.
"Kay, Kada, please!"
"Captain," Kada said, as the guards neared the door, almost dragging their prisoner. "About what happened here?" The captain looked quickly at each of his men.
"You can be assured of my men's complete discretion, Your Majesty."
Secretary Tayabusa cleared his throat.
"And I have written down the names of everyone in this room. If anyone speaks of this, they will be discovered and punished accordingly."
He leveled a heavy glance at each of the various servants and functionaries in turn.
"On the contrary," Kada said, "no one will be punished for speaking of what happened here. My dead mother shamed my family, and I will not grant her the mercy of covering her deeds in silence. Most of all, my betrothed and his family deserve to know the truth before they wed their honor to mine."
If the Takedas went ahead with the marriage, obviously knowing the truth, they would have a harder time destroying her than if she married and they found out about her shameful secret. Other than that, there were few things the Takedas could do. A coup was doubtful, despite Oshobi's popularity among the city guard. The Takedas postponing the marriage until spring was most likely, and that would give her time. Time might give her opportunities. Best for her personally, and worst for Seth, the Takedas might cancel the wedding and withdraw to their home island. That would mean they would come back in the spring for war. At sunrise, Vi swung her feet over the side of her bed in her little room. She'd barely slept after leaving Sister Ariel, and she'd had horrible dreams about Kylar and oceans of blood. Maybe it was an omen. She was supposed to meet Eline this morning, first thing. She touched the water basin.
"Cold," she said.
When ice crystals began to spider across the surface, she broke the ice and washed her face, gasping despite herself. In minutes, she finished her ablutions and pulled the ill-fitting Tyro's robe over her ill-fitting shift. Vi tied back her hair with the white ribbons Sister Ariel had given her. She heard the familiar scuff of Sister Ariel's steps before the sister knocked on her door and came in without waiting for permission.
"You're up,"
Sister Ariel said, surprised.
"You're going to see her?"
"She's up in the pommel of the Seraph's sword," Vi asked.
"Praying still, Uli says."
"Vi," Sister Ariel paused.
"You're one of us now. The Seraph will pay your debts. If you need to, you can offer her whatever it takes."
"I don't think she's looking for a bribe," Vi said.
"Nor do I."
Sister Ariel paused again.
"I expected I'd have to force you to go to her, Vi.
The girl you used to be would never have done this.
Well done."
Perfect. Now it was impossible to back down. Vi found the central staircase and began climbing. She was only a few floors up when the stones pulsed gently, as they did every dawn. She paused on a landing as nearly invisible trickles of dust joined together into rivulets. They rushed past her feet as a small hole opened in the wall. The single day's accumulation of dust slipped through, and the hole closed. Everywhere in the Seraph, the scene was repeated. Powered by the first rays of sunlight, all natural dirt was whisked away, Outside, the seraph would appear to be briefly surrounded by a corona, as magic repulsed dirt, grime, rain, or snow. The debris would cascade into the lake, and there be dispersed by magic that kept the waters around the seraph even cleaner than the rest of Lake Vestachi. There were, of course, still plenty of chores for the Tyros. The magic was disengaged in any room where it might interfere with the sisters' experiments or sensitive artifacts, and it disregarded scraps of parchment, clothes, or anything else someone might leave on the floor. But without the magic, the Tyros could have worked constantly and never been able to keep the chantry clean. It was simply too big. Vi reached one of the upper floors where full sisters had their apartments. There was some pecking order to who had what floor and which sisters got the treasured southern exposures, but Vi had no idea how it worked. Mercifully, no one was in the hall. Vi followed the unflickering lamps to the southwest corner. The seraph held a sword in her left hand, its point at her feet, the hilt coming above her waist held slightly to one side. The pommel of that giant sword was capped with a round jewel. The room was a globe from which sisters could see sunrise and sunset. The walls were always transparent. It was a sanctuary for those who needed to meditate or, as in Eileen's case, pray. Taking a deep breath, Vi opened the door. Eileen was seated, looking toward the eastern mountains. The view was breathtaking. Vi had never been so high in her life. The punts in the lake below looked the size of her thumb. The mountains glowed. The sun was a jagged half circle, barely peeking over them. But Vi's eyes sought out Eileen's face. Her skin glowed in the gentle light, her eyes deep brown, her scars softened. She gestured for Vi to come stand with her, not glancing away from the horizon. Tentatively, Vi stepped up beside her. Together, they watched the sun rise. Not daring to turn and look Eileen in the face, but not able to wait another moment, Vi said, "I'm sorry if I interrupted your prayers." She drew her knife and rested it across her palms. "I made you a promise. I've done you and Kylar a great wrong. If you wish, I deserve no less." Eileen took the knife. After a minute, she said, "His mercies are new every morning." Vi blinked. She glanced over at Eileen and saw a tear tracking down her cheek. "Whose?" "The one God's. If he forgives you, how dare I not?" "What?" Eileen took Vi's right hand with her left. Then she stood, shoulder to shoulder with her, looking at the newborn son. She held Vi's hand firmly, but with nothing vindictive or tense in her grip. There was an aura about her of tremendous peace. Peace so thick, it slowly calmed Vi's taut nerves. After a few minutes, Eileen turned to her. Vi was surprised to find herself brave enough to meet the woman's eyes. "I believe the God has a purpose for me, Vi. I don't know what it is, but I know it isn't murdering you." Eileen threw the knife aside. "We're in a big mess.
but we're in it together. All right?